Friday, May the 21st, something happened that may be of utmost importance in the art future of the nation's capital. I'd ask Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Hirshhorn to come down from New York for lunch with me, inviting them intentionally 30 minutes before the other guest came so that we could have a quiet, personal tour of the state floor and the second floor. Mr. Hirshhorn has the greatest collection of modern sculpture in existence, according to Dylan Ripley and Roger Stevens, as well as an outstanding collection of paintings, including 32 Aikens. For some time, the Smithsonian has been talking with him, as I understand, of many other museums, including some from England. He's quite a flirt, Mary Lasker says, in the effort to get him to will or give his collection to them. He has agreed in a letter to give it to the Smithsonian if they meet certain requirements, a separate and suitable building bearing his name, assurance of good care, and so forth. So I'd ask the Roger Stevens, the Dylan Ripleys, his friends, the Sam Harrises, and delightfully enough, the Abe Fortases turn out to be old acquaintances of his. So for my own comfort and benefit, I'd ask Abe and Carol to join us for lunch. I'd met Mr. Hirshhorn briefly before, and gathered that he's one of those great American stories, a man of poor beginnings, but intelligence and drive, who seizes an opportunity offered in this marvelous land and acquires great wealth, all in his lifetime. I still do not know much about him. I think uranium is a source of his wealth. He has been collecting for 40 years. When he began, of course, he didn't have much money, so he told me. But he had amazing, unerring sort of taste that picked out the things that were going to last. That's Roger Stevens' estimate. He's seen his collection. I haven't. Well, at any rate, the Hirshhorns came, and we had a delightful time. We loved seeing the White House collection, and I love showing it to people who enjoy it. He picked out, one by one, the things I liked best as the ones he liked best. The Rembrandt Peale Thomas Jefferson portrait, the Benjamin Franklin. He loved the Whistler, too, and the John Singer Sargent. I hope, of course, that one of those 32 Aikens will come to rest in the White House. And I have charged Roger Stevens and Dr. Dylan Ripley and Abe Fortas with that hope, because I am the world's poorest salesman. And what a job I find myself in. I should be a showman and a salesman, a clothes horse and a publicity sounding board, with a good heart and a real interest in the folks in Dimebox and Rosebud, as well as Newport and whatever the fancy places are. Well, the last wide interest I do have. Lunch was pleasant, a little fencing, talking about the building. Mr. Hirshhorn is going to give $1 million toward it. Roger Stevens estimates it will cost $10 million. A design has already been drawn by Nat Owings. Since much of his collection is statuary, it will fill and adorn the statuary garden. Then the building itself will house the rest and the paintings. The design is rather avant-garde, but also quite thrilling when you get used to it. In the middle of lunch, Lyndon came in, met everybody all around, thanked Mr. Hirshhorn, and quite boldly said what I had been wanting to say and couldn't, that it was great, wonderful that the people of the United States were going to enjoy his works, but that it would be downright selfish if the White House itself didn't get one. Mr. Hirshhorn could appreciate him, I think. There's something alike between them. They're both aggressive. Mr. Hirshhorn loves his things. He calls them his children. He's collected them for 40 years. I asked him to make the announcement, if he could, when we have the Arts Festival on the 14th of June, to which, of course, we hope very much that he will come. But he's going to Europe, and I doubt that all the arrangements for the gift will be completed by then. But what a coup, what a crowning event for the Arts Festival if they could. The Arts Festival is something that I look forward to with shivers and apprehension. We could fall flat on our faces, or it could be great. Lyndon bounced in a moment later, bringing Mr. Arendt from Birmingham, Alabama, our old-time lawyer friend who helped us solve the winding cobweb of Uncle Claude's estate years ago. This opens a great chapter. We will see. Dylan Ripley used the expression that it was the greatest art gift that had been made, that is, if it is made, to the United States since Andrew Mellon in the 30s gave what formed the National Gallery. How wonderful to be associated, our administration, with such a thing. I sandwiched in a little talk with Lucy about her invitations for graduation. It turns out she is positively determined not to send out any. Says, Mother, it's just a request for a present. It's phony. It's hypocrisy. I'm not going to do it. Oh, yes, I'm going to see that certain people get there, like my friends here in town, but I'm not going to send out invitations. I lost that battle. And then came the second event of the day. 4 hours of work with ABC. Makeup by Mrs. Brown, help from Simone, and then off to the Lincoln Memorial at 5 o'clock. A long script, many retakes as twilight deepened and the light changed, and each view more beautiful than the last. Finally at dark, when there was a moment's pause, the guard asked me to walk around to the other side with him. And there, as we looked up at the Custis Mansion, glowing like a pearl on the hillside, he pointed out down below a small flickering light and said, "That's the eternal flame." It was President Kennedy's grave. I felt eerie. It is, without a doubt, on the axis of the most magnificent view, the most wonderful vista in all the United States, to my thinking. John Secondary intersperses his takes while they're changing the machinery with a vast repertory of interesting stories about other documentaries he's done. One concerned a time when he had worked with the Russians on some film. They got quite talkative, quite friendly, he said, and talked about a state visit they had made to China. He said that the banquets were elaborate, enormous, course after course after course. There came a time in the middle of the long banquet when a cat and a snake were brought in, put in a little pit-like arena, a stage, so to speak, right in the midst of the diners, and had a duel to the death. Later on, the diners ate the vanquished. This was a bit hard on the Russians. They said, "You know, the Chinese are such barbarians." I brought along a box of candy, which soon disappeared. I had a thermos of coffee. It was take after take after take, and every light between the columns at the foot of the statue of President Lincoln. And then finally, after 9 o'clock, it was over. And very weary, I rode back to the diplomatic reception room to find the Bill Whites and Vicky, their daughter, and Marianne Means and Emmett Reardon, and Jack and Charlotte Brooks and John Chancellor, and Jake Jacobson and Vicky all gathered together and waiting for Lyndon to join us. The chopper was on the ground. The holiday spirit was in the air. We were as good as headed for Camp David. But within a few minutes, Lyndon joined us, and off we went in a very relaxed mood for a late dinner, reading in bed, and to sleep about 1. I think the Dominican situation must be lightening. I do not know how much to believe in the papers, but Lyndon's spirit is lighter and his face less weary, less lined with trouble. I look back with pride on his brief moment or two at lunch with the Hirshhorns. How quickly he did and said what they would remember a long time. Very gracious, very much aware of their gift, a possible gift. That's one of his greatest qualities, being able to do in 2 minutes what could take 2 hours.